2 Wrestling Podcast. Stay tuned for the best news, views, and interviews. Brought to you by V2Wrestling.com.
Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Rain drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Hello and welcome back to another V2 Wrestling Podcast. Now you're almost probably thinking, what the hell's this music got to do with anything? Well, it's a new dawn, it's a new day, and I am feeling good, and so's the podcast. Welcome, Chris. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Did you wonder what was going on with the music then?
I don't wonder what's going on when you do things, to be honest with you. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. It's been over 6 months? I don't know. Can you actually remember the last podcast we did, Chris?
I'd have thought it was longer, I suppose.
Yeah, well, but I don't think we've done one this year, so you're most probably right, actually. But yeah, it is the return of the V2 Wrestling Podcast, and we've got a guest coming on in a minute. We may have more than one guest. We'll have to wait and see. But we are going to be joined by Nick Aldis, formerly known as Magnus in TNA, and current Global Force Wrestling champion, world champion. So we'll be having a chat with him about all things wrestling and what else he's been getting up to. But before we do that, we're just going to have a quick, I suppose, recap of who we are and what we do, because it has been quite a while. So, Chris, what have you been doing since the last time we had a show 9 months ago? Have you been watching much wrestling? I can't speak. Wrestling.
Wrestling. I've seen some of the wrestling they call wrestling on the television. I must admit, I probably haven't watched TNA. I haven't watched TNA even when we were talking about it. But probably definitely haven't watched TNA since then. I've watched a little bit of I've been to NXT a couple of times. I didn't go to Progress. I hear other people talk about Progress. I'm a bit lazy though. I've had other things going on.
To be honest, when people are talking about Progress, as was probably in your group therapy groups that you're hearing people getting Progress and you're not. But yeah, there is a show called Progress as well, of course. All right. Well, for first time listeners, hopefully you're not first time listeners, but we're based in the UK. And as Chris says there, he's more of a WWE man. And historically, I've been more of a TNA Impact kind of guy. And, you know, part of the reason why we stopped doing the podcast was that really, I suppose, both shows really hit a low, didn't they? Would that be fair to say?
I mean, between the point of TNA very nearly going out of business, I guess, it's still confusing their business policies, I think, and that WWE is prone to its dips. I think the passion died a bit, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's really why. But over the last few months, you know, my passion has been reignited. I've been watching TNA quite regularly recently. And I never thought I'd say this, but for my own personal saviour of wrestling has been Matt Hardy, who's just... I didn't think I'd ever use Matt Hardy in a positive sense at all, but really what he's achieved TNA through his final deletion stuff with Brother Nero has been fantastic, and it's got me watching again. And on the back of that, I've seen some fantastic stuff with Eli Drake, EC3, even enjoyed Bobby Lashley. Now, one of my all-time favourites, Damien Sandow's, or Aaron Rex as he's now known, is in TNA. So for me, it's been good stuff. And did you watch the WWE draft split stuff? Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. Christ, that's a boring way to spend 3 hours, or 2 hours. Yeah, I really think it's not working, if I'm honest with you. I think you can look at that by conversations people have on the two programs. Say on V2 Forum, yesterday I could see 20 odd replies, I think, on Raw, zero on SmackDown. So people can talk about their interests as much as they want, but naturally they are inclined to watch Raw and see what happens with SmackDown.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because, you know, the split happened. And, you know, everyone was raving about, oh, Raw's got a new look, SmackDown feels really fresh. And after those first two shows, they kind of went back to what they usually do, you know, and just putting on mediocre programs programming. You know, I mean, look, it's SummerSlam this week, supposed to be the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. I don't know if that's still the case or whether Rumble's consider that or Survivor Series, but it's one of the big four. And it's just like, oh, really?
It's a good card, but it's not. I mean, I think there's teething issues with the roster because they're now they've had to go slightly. I mean, the best story is at the moment, if you ask me, is about the guy who is in theory not signed to either show. Hugh Slater is the best part of WWE at the moment. So
yeah, well, we've always been non-Slater haters. We've always quite enjoyed him. And funnily enough, he's got this kind of program going on, which was pretty much what he did a couple of years ago when he did the old. Interrupting the Legends, if you remember. Yeah. And everyone said, you know, oh, he's doing the thing that's right for WWE. You know, he's really putting on a good show, entertaining everyone. He's going to get a push on the back of it. And it led to the three-man band. So hopefully this time, you know, him being once again jobbed out to everyone, it's hopefully going to turn into something good. But yeah, it's been a bit disappointing. Sometimes this weekend, we're not going to talk about much wrestling on this show this week. The reason being, as I said, we have got Nick Aldis Magnus coming on, who we want to spend some time with. But we just, I suppose, really wanted to reconnect with our audience and just let you know we are going to be back, not as regularly as before. It's not going to be a weekly show. It's more likely to be a fortnightly, maybe even a little bit more regular than that. And the only way that you're going to be able to catch our shows and our thoughts on what's going on in the world of wrestling is to like us on Facebook. That's the V2 Wrestling Network. You can follow us on Twitter, V2 Wrestling Show. You can come and join the forum. That's where we'd really love to see you. We talk about a load of sports, not just wrestling. So we talk about... What do you talk about on there, Chris? What sports are you following on there?
Oh, anything. Oh, goodness. Football. That's
soccer for the Americans.
Soccer for the Americans. People like boxing. Boxing and rugby is very popular. The tennis is very popular. Oh, there's a little bit of everything. We've even got some talk about the Olympic Games and those things going on.
Yeah, that's very topical, bearing in mind they finish in a couple of days, and by the time people listen to this, it'll be over. But yeah, we can still talk about that if you want. But anyway, come and check out the forum anyway. You can find it at www.606v2.com. So there you go, 606v2.com. And it's called the V2 Forum, and you'll find some cracking chat on there. When Chris is not on, obviously. Right. Yeah, so just very quickly back to the wrestling before we're joined by Nick. Just SummerSlam. Can you see any card? What's your favourite match on that card? You said it was a good card. I don't see it myself, but what do you think is the best match likely to be?
I'm looking forward to the Randy Orton Brock Lesnar match. I always enjoy watching Lesnar. I know they're two guys who'd be considered very... I suppose in style rather than injury safe workers. So I don't think they're going to take any wild risks of what, you know, it's not going to be a completely stylistic match, but it could be, they're very solid, clean workers and they might actually both, it might be quite a good motivation for both of them actually. Yeah, and otherwise Balor's always interesting to watch. And
yeah, I don't quite understand that one because obviously you had Seth Rollins who was a champion for a long time, carrying Raw for a long, long period of time, came back from injury, hasn't really had a big win since then. So you think he's due one. At the same time, do you bring someone up from NXT and then job him out to Rollins? It's just, I don't know who's going to win that, but I think according to the odds, I believe... was it Banner or Rollins who was favourite?
You can't make that point and then not know which one you're talking about because you're just... Is it one or the other who was favourite? I think it's one or the other. I think it's one of the two men, I believe.
Bear with me while I look it up, but I can tell you that Lesnar is heavy favourite for that match. And it seems like a wasted match for Lesnar to me.
Although, to be fair, I'm also looking forward to the Cesaro versus Sheamus first in best of seven series match.
Yeah, because, well, I was going to say, it's just, a really weird one, isn't it?
A fresh feud that they've done this year already. So what we want is to then, they've had two matches since, I think, and now we're going to have another seven. You're likely enough. I can't see anyone winning it 5-2 or 6-1 or 7, I mean, 4-0 even.
Yeah, you know when someone goes 3-0 up, they're going to lose the next three matches, aren't they? But, keep talking, Chris, while I look for these odds.
I am looking forward to seeing her, if Eva Marie is mentioned with her suspension. I want it to be a work where actually she's not suspended, but within this gimmick of her not being able to have matches, they've also fake suspended her.
Yep. Anyway, I've got it now. Here we go. So, yes, the favourite is Finn Balor. There you go, to win the match. Dean Ambrose is heavy, heavy favourite. Although I will say the Seth Rollins Balor match, it is quite close, but it is slightly favoured Finn. Dean Ambrose is favourite to beat Dolph Ziggler. I don't know how he got into the main event scene again, but I'm not against it. Sasha Banks is the biggest favourite on the card to retain. Yeah. Apollo Crews to go over The Miz. And Rusev to win as well. There you go. Which I find interesting. And AJ Styles, favourite against Cena. The Club, favourites. And Enzo and Big Cass. There you go. Is it me, Enzo and Cass? I think they're really entertaining, but are you getting bored of them already?
I think they need to worry slightly about just overexposing the same thing on the mic. To be fair, as much as I like Jericho and Kevin Owens, I actually think they've been quite funny together. Is that it generally seems to me like Chris Jericho is trying his best to work with as many people that he can fit into one tag team name with his own name. Like, it was just Jericho is where it fits, so why not? So he's just generally going to... There may end up being a Jerry Enzo as well.
Well, they have been very good, but it just seems such a waste of Kevin Owens, doesn't it, to go into it. It's a kind of a holding feud, but...
Sami Zayn's not even on the card. They arguably had the best match on the last pay-per-view, so...
Well, we're going to wrap it up there because we've got Nick Aldis trying to call me at the moment, trying to come through to do this call. So we'll be back in a second where we'll be joined by Magnus. And welcome back. I'm now delighted to say we have got Nick on the line. I'm going to call you Nick, not Magnus, but for all our listeners out there, obviously it's Nick Aldis, formerly known as Magnus in TNA. Hello, Nick.
Hi guys, sorry it took so long for you to finally nail me down.
It's quite all right. We're just delighted to have you on. We know that you're extremely busy, and hopefully, you know, we'll get a fantastic interview out of you today. And if we don't, well then we're just going to be hassling you.
Willing to give a fantastic interview, but I'll shoot for satisfactory.
Well, if we get that, we'll be doing well. I tell you what, we've had some people on in the past, and you know, some of them have been fantastic, some of them have been plain weird, but I can tell straight away we're going to get on fine today. So we've been trying to get you on for the last few days, and you've been incredibly busy, and at the moment you're doing your own podcast as well. So why don't we put the cheap plugs in first of all, so you can talk about your podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it started just as an experiment, just to see whether I enjoyed it, whether it would get any listeners, and it really just stemmed from the fact that I've been a guest on some on several, obviously, including some of the more high profile ones like Jericho's, and I just did Chael Sonnen's last week, and I just did Bischoff's and stuff, and almost every time I do one of these, I invariably get a bunch of sort of messages and tweets and all this sort of thing going, oh, it'd be great if you had one. And it was Mickey who said, you know, you should try doing that. Like you're a good conversationalist. And a lot of the time, you know, you get frustrated at the questions that don't get asked, so you could ask them. And so I figured, what the hell, let's give it a go. It's called Inside Pro Wrestling. It's on iTunes. You can go and subscribe there. If you go to my Twitter at Magnus Official or nickoldis.libsyn.com, you can find it pretty easily at this point.
Okay, well, you've opened up a can of worms there where you say people don't ask the questions you want to ask. Does that mean that we can just go anywhere today?
No, I just mean that. So sometimes you do these, these interviews, you know, and you give up an hour of your time or whatever. And then I did one, me and Bull Dempsey were talking about it. And you get these guys who just pull up your Wikipedia page, you know, and then they go through it sort of bit by bit, you know, the significant timeline areas. And then they just go, like, I had this one guy in Canada who goes, you started wrestling in 2005 with the Knight family. Tell us about that. Well, you just told me about it. And then it's like the next thing, you got your big break with Gladiators in 2008, and tell us about that. After about 30 minutes, I was just like, listen, can I give you some constructive criticism? You know, and I was like, this is not an interview, you know what I mean? Like, this is just me talking about myself. You know, if you don't have something insightful to add, like, this really isn't much of an interview. And so, and it just came from my frustration at how, it's great that people are able to just buy the gear and kind of get online in a day. That's what I did. But at the same time, the other side of such a free market like that is obviously the quality control is not as easy.
I've just had to screw up all my notes.
I was going to... So, you started wrestling in 2005, Nick, with the Knight family. No, you'll be glad to know that doing things like research is not really part of our MO, so you won't be getting a lot from our Wikipedia page. Although, I did actually have a question for you, which does come from Wikipedia, which was more to do with Mickey, because you told us before the interview today that you're buying a horse farm in Florida. And it was a random fact on Mickey's Wikipedia page saying that she wants to become a horse trainer on a horse farm. So is that the plan for the two of you to retire and do that?
She doesn't. Like most things on Wikipedia, it's sort of right.
It was in 2009, I might add. So Nick,
She doesn't. I don't think that she has. She's been riding since she was a kid. You know, her whole family, she grew up on a horse farm here in Virginia, and it's always been something that she wanted to do. But obviously, we have three horses, but, especially with our schedules as they were, you know, hers, even before we met, you know, at WWE, obviously, is a massive schedule. And then at TNA, even though those first few years that we were together, you know, the TNA schedule was quite considerable. So there was just no way that we could have them on the property. You know, we had to have them boarded somewhere because, you know, they need daily care. Mm-hmm. But she's always had aspirations to do like a sanctuary sort of place that's really more for kids, like therapy horses and stuff like that, because she didn't have a particularly nice childhood, and the horses was one of the sort of things that really helped her escape. And she always talked about what a great tool that was for her to sort of survive some of the, you know, some of the less pleasant things that happened in her childhood. And she's always wanted to give that experience and share that experience with other children, you know, who might be going through the same thing. And I'm a very passionate advocate for children's charities, especially. So it all sort of came together when we were looking to relocate. You know, schedules are winding down now somewhat. So we found this place in St. Cloud, which is just outside of Orlando, and I've always wanted to go back to Florida. That's where I lived when I first came here, and I love the weather and the lack of state income tax. So we sort of compromised, and yeah, we're moving next month and looking forward to it.
Well, obviously, you know, the interview today is to talk to you, and I know you said maybe Mickey might stumble into the interview a little bit later on.
But final
question, just not specifically about Mickey, but I've always said working with my wife would be my nightmare scenario. I would hate it, and a lot of my friends who do work with their wives said it's horrendous. What was it like actually working with Mickey in TNA?
Well, working with her in the angle was fine, because by the time we did that, we were really driving the car. There had been various ideas for us to work in angles that had been pitched to us previously, and we'd always turn them down. Like, we hadn't even told anyone that we were dating, you know, and yet, like, immediately, the TNA creative were coming to us going like, oh, Mickey's doing this this pre-tape with Lisa, where like Lisa runs her over with a motorcycle. We were thinking it'd be cool if like you come in and check on her. And I was like, why? You know, like, you don't, no one even knows that we're dating, and I'm a heel, and she's like one of the hottest baby faces we've got. You know, like, it would kill my heat, and it would kill her shine as a baby face. I was like, what are you talking about? And so sometimes it was sort of thrown at us like that, as this, you know, like things often are. And we were always keen to not do it. And then, but then when the angle with James and everything came along, or with Tom first, with Bram, sorry, like what, that was the one that I particularly wanted to do, just because I knew that people would sense the realness of it all, because, you know, because he and I really are best friends, and you know, obviously we, Mickey and I really were together and all that. So we felt like that would, you know, it would translate to some really good TV, which it did. And then of course they had to keep it going with the stuff with James, which started well, but ended awfully.
Is she afraid of trains now?
She's afraid of any stories that involve trains.
Yeah, fair enough.
It doesn't bode well because our son's obsessed with them.
Fair enough. Funny enough, you know, you're talking about a lot about creative there. Is that something that you'd like to get involved in, or having seen the inner workings of how it goes on at TNA, is it something that's put you off for life?
I would like to, but I also understand that it's incredibly difficult, and I would not like to assume that I'd be any good at it. I think I would be, for example, I was always one of those guys that I'd come up with 10 different ideas for everybody else, you know, but then when it came to my own stuff, I'd sort of go, whatever you think, I don't really know. So I, for some reason, probably because I was less guarded when it came to other people's stuff, I was always one of those people that would grab people if I, you know, when they came through the curtain and say, I just had this great idea for you, you know, or whatever, after watching their segment and stuff. So, but there's a big difference between that and having to, you know, being forced to write a certain amount of content every single week. And I think that, you know, that's something that fans have to appreciate for everybody. The WWE writers, the TNA writers, Vince, you know, all these different people. It's really, really tough to come up with 2, 3, 4, 5 hours of original content every single week. Like, that takes a long time. And unfortunately, it makes it really difficult to filter.
Sure. Just on that final creative bit, I can't remember if you overlapped or not, but were you there when Billy Corgan came in?
Yes, I was. Just for... really, I think it was about a month, because I was already into the storyline with James. Mm-hmm. So it must have been, that last sort of few weeks. It was pleasant. It was pleasant to work with. Billy and I actually had most of the time our opinions on the creative tended to parallel. So it was very easy to work with Billy for me.
Okay, good. Well, obviously, if you weren't there that long with him, we won't go much more into that. But, I mean, what was your lasting memory of TNA? Because obviously, you had a big roller coaster ride when you're in there. And, you know, I'm not going to read off the Wikipedia page. I'm going to just do it from memory. And my memories of you. Obviously, there was the big build to you getting that first championship. And then the somewhat strange way you were booked with the championship. But, you know, I go back and one of my favorite parts of TNA over the last, you know, 10 years was London's Brawling with Nigel McGuinness. I mean, I really enjoyed that. It's just a shame that obviously Nigel left so quickly after it just started. But I mean, what was your favorite time and memory from your time at TNA?
It's so amazing that people so frequently bring up the tag team with Nigel, because it really didn't even get off the ground, which is just such a shame, because just by virtue of the fact that from what we did, like 3 weeks of TV or something, and yet people to this day still go, I really loved your tag team with Nigel, like it was an established thing. We've working together for ages. I loved London Brawling, and I'm going, but we had one match on TV, you know, one match on TV, and then I think one on Explosion, and then we had the in-ring segment, and then unfortunately that was the end of that.
But you could just see where it was going, though, you know, even the stylized way. From memory, did you not wear a tilted beret or something as well?
I actually wore the beret. I actually wore a beret a few times back on the independents, like before I got Gladiators or anything like that. I went through a little phase of sort of doing a bit of. I saw Jesse Ventura wearing one in an old AWA promo or something like that, and I just back then I used to get my wrestling gear off eBay. So uh, I Adrian Street's wife used to make sort of offcuts from custom-made gear, and I couldn't afford the custom-made gear, so I just got, so like, it would always be these bright color, like tassel-y tights and stuff like that. So I went for that, and I wore like a pink wife beater and a beret for a while as one of my million of sort of incarnations of my independent character. But then I don't know how it came up, but me and Eric Young were talking about it one day, and I was talking about, I think Val, like SoCal Val always wears berets, so I put it on, and they were like, "Hey, you look good in that beret." I said, "I used to wear one on the Indies, you know." And then they were like, "You totally should do it, you know. It works with your, like, with the thing with Nigel and everything." Like, so I just did it as a joke, and of course Vince Russo loved it.
Oh dear. Well, maybe we should talk about Vince. Well, you're doing something with him, so we'll come on to that actually. But no, I know you're only doing it, as you said, for 3 weeks. But if so many people mention it, obviously there was something there that could have worked.
There's chemistry there. Yeah. I love being in tag teams. I mean, you could arguably my most credible, you know, my sort of most, a lot of the best of my body of work is part of tag teams, whether it be the tag team with Doug, which really helped me become, you know, a usable performer for a long-term basis for the company. And then the team with Joe, which was just like that was in terms of a sustained period. That was probably the favorite period of my career, teaming with him, just because obviously I always had my eye on becoming the top guy. I had my eye on the prize. You know, you should always, you know, it's a cliche thing, but it's right. It's true. You should always, you should have your eye on trying to be the top guy and be the champion. But when I did that, obviously a lot of the enjoyment is taken away because I don't want to beat a dead horse about it, but it's just, I think I just was a victim of bad timing and circumstance. And then unfortunately I sort of got tarnished with the AJ departure and the new TNA that nobody liked, and I just sort of got tarnished as the sort of face of it, which was really, you know, was unfair. But at the same time, I said, no one's doing it deliberately. It's just the way it is. I just remind them of the things that they don't like. So I just moved on. That was one of the reasons why I left. I moved on because I realized that sometimes, you know, you can be in the right place at the right time, and sometimes you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So
yeah, absolutely. I'll come back on to Joe in a second, but is the door open for you? Would you consider it, or is it just something that you don't really want to pursue again? Or
with TNA?
With TNA.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. I did Vince Russo's podcast, and he only actually ended up airing it a couple of months ago. But we didn't. But we actually recorded it way before that. It was back last year, and I'm not used trying to say this as an excuse or anything, but I had just had surgery. Like I did Vince's podcast like maybe a day or two after I'd had surgery on a torn bicep, which was like by far the worst injury I'd ever had. And I was pretty miserable. Like I was on a lot of painkillers. My arm was in like a full, like 45-degree locked sort of brace thing. You know, I couldn't sleep. I was really miserable, and just, you know, it's just when you're an athlete and you've worked so hard on your body, and then just, you know, it just fails on you like that, and you're just stuck and can't do anything. It's depressing, you know. And I just had this. I was just in a bit of a dark place when I did Vince's interview, so I was. I told the truth, but I probably said more than I would have said, you know, about TNA and my time there. None of it was fabricated or even embellished, but it didn't need to be said. So I felt like after that came out, I went, you know, when I heard it again, I suddenly realized like how much worse I was when I did the interview, and I just went, well, I guess I won't be going back there anytime soon, but I don't know. Never say never. Honestly, guys, like I've really been very disconnected from the wrestling business deliberately. I've been deliberately trying to work on other facets of my life because I was starting to feel so resentful towards the business just because I've sort of given 11 years of my life to it and was starting to get sort of frustrated at the lack of other facets, which might come as a surprise to people because people often describe me as, oh, you're, you know, multifaceted, you've got these other things going. But I was frustrated. Like, I didn't feel like I was living up to my full potential, you know, outside of wrestling. So I sort of dedicated myself to that. Plus, it tied in with the fact that I'm awaiting my naturalization from the US government, so I can't really do anything in the States at the moment anyway, which is why I'm going to Japan next month, and then like Canada and Germany and Australia and stuff, because I actually can't wrestle in the States at the moment.
So how does that work then with the naturalization? I mean, I'm guessing that's like for a green card or whatever. Or...
Yeah. So because I'd always just been here on visas. I was always here on a P1 visa, which is for athletes and entertainers. And obviously, we knew that Mickey and I knew that we would get married. So obviously, getting a green card is much easier once you're married. So I had just always been on the visa, never bothered to attempt to get the green card until we were married, because one, it would have cost me tens of thousands of dollars and a lot of time, but also because once the process starts, you know, you're really at the mercy of the government, so you can't do anything. But once you're married, obviously the things move along a little bit quicker, but it's still really, up to them how quickly it is. I just had a small victory yesterday when I asked for expedited travel permission so that I could go to Japan and work for Inoki and stuff. So that was a small victory, but yeah, it takes time. I'd never done it until I had to, basically.
So to summarize that, you married Mickey for a green card. Okay, moving
Absolutely,
on.
Absolutely, yeah. when we go in for our interview, she's really nervous about the interview. And I said, babe, most people don't have as much proof. Most people don't have as much proof of being a couple in person as we do on the internet.
Just show TV. Look what I did. There's more
people, like there's more stuff on the internet than we have to prove to show them.
I fought for her in public.
Anyway,
I was handcuffed to a ring.
The other part of that obviously is the Inoki stuff. Is there any more you can say on that?
Inoki has it's fairly new, I think, his company is IGF, Inoki Genome Federation, and they just reached out and wanted me for this show they had coming up, and then they have some stuff. They're trying to get something going in China too, and they asked me if I would go and take part in the press conference and stuff like that. So I said, sure, you know.
That's got to be an incredible experience as well.
Exciting, yeah. I'm really I'm not sure yet whether I'm going to China on this trip. Like it was penciled in, and then they postponed it, and then they contacted me again and said, are you free an extra couple of days? Can we, like, we're thinking of flying you from Tokyo straight to Macau, to do this press stuff. And I was just like, yeah, whatever you need.
It sounds like something that's going to ignite the passion in it again as well. I wouldn't want to suppose an idea, but it sounds like wrestling's very all-consuming.
You're getting warmer, you're fine.
I mean, from the outside, I'd say, obviously, but wrestling seems like something that's very all-consuming. And if it beats you down a bit, something like an opportunity, especially stylistically, to go and do something fresh must be very kind of inspiring.
Yes. Well, and to me, the half of the joy of my career was the travel. You know, I loved going to all these different places in different countries and being with the guys and seeing all this stuff. So, the idea, you know, when you're working mostly, when you go back to just doing independence, a lot of that gets taken away because it's not, you know, structured the same way. So
it's bookings and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like getting in the car and driving, and you know, we were approaching it in a very practical, sort of pragmatic way, which is the right way to approach any business. But after a while, the enjoyment part of it gets taken away because we're going, well, we can drive here and we can take Donovan with us and we can do this and we can. It became very sort of it became very worky. You know what I mean?
Business-like.
Yes. Yeah.
It takes away the kind of.
And look, I'm not trying to portray this idea that I'm this hugely successful, you know, guy in the business or anything, but it's just for me, I just don't have the desire to go and do to go and work all these small independent shows with different in different sort of varying degrees of quality, building opponent, promoter, and I just don't mind doing some, but I just don't have that desire to make that my full-time occupation.
I suppose you have to do that as a when you first start, so it must feel a little bit in a way like I've done my miles.
Exactly, right. And for me, it's I had this conversation with Jeff, you know, when we were sort of chatting about what was on the horizon with Global and stuff, and I just said, listen, man, like I'm, if someone calls me and offers me a contract somewhere, I'm going to consider it. Because at the moment, like I've made wrestling a part-time thing again, because I just don't have the desire to do that, on a full-time basis. And he said, I completely understand. And I just said, I'll be around if something comes up, or I won't, you know, it's just, who knows? I don't know what's coming up, but, in the meantime, I've had so much enjoyment out of working on these other projects. Like we're getting very close to launching an online fitness course that's targeted at new moms with a really cool company that I've been working with on and off for a few years. And we've registered the LLC. You know, we have our equity in the company, and I'm producing all of the audiovisual stuff and everything. It's just been really fun, and I've just got so much enjoyment out of it and learning so much from these e-commerce like whiz kids that now my brain is ticking over the next project I want to do and the next one, and I have no time, but it's just because my schedule is full of my own stuff. It's not commitments to other people. It's all stuff that I've piled on myself, because I'm just overflowing with ideas and passion now for my sort of entrepreneurial stuff.
So I'm not to take in that Florida is anything to do with a university that's nearby and a show that's at a university.
No.
Sale and it's, I'm not to take you've had a word with Joe and the rumors would fly. You know, the rumors would fly, so it has to be asked.
No, if anything that proximity is probably going to be, it's probably going to help. The only part I feel like it might be beneficial to Mickey, but I don't think that it'll, I don't think it'll make any difference to me. That was just, it's just ironic that, it's just funny how things turn out, because, you know, I lived in Tampa, I lived in, you know, Clearwater and then Tampa for most of my time here in the States. And then obviously when Mickey and I were together, you know, got together, I moved up here to Virginia, because that's where her family are all from. It's just ironic that all that time I worked in Orlando, you know, didn't live there, and now that Orlando is the sort of almost the home of wrestling now, really, in many ways, it's funny that I'm, you know, moving there. But it's just purely coincidence. I mean, there ain't that many horse farms in Florida, so not in areas like that anyway. There's a lot in the country, but there's not that many in sort of built up areas.
No. Just before we move on to those other projects you talked about, because I know we've only got a certain amount of time with you left, if we can just touch on Global Force Wrestling. I know you said you gave a woman's answer, I may be here, maybe not, for Jeff. I mean, I'm sorry, Nick, that was a typical, that's something that my wife would say, you know, what time are you going
to
be there?
Is that what people used to say to you when you were dating? So you
say... Anyway.
That's what I used to say to girls when I didn't want to date, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
So on that note, you know, our listeners would want to know, when's the next show? Do you know, or is it just on hold at the moment? What's the situation?
What I can tell you is that he's been working very hard to establish a partnership and has established a partnership with Arthur, or otherwise known as A. Smith, who's a big time producer out in Los Angeles. He's behind American Ninja Warrior and you know, some other big time stuff like that. And that's what he's been working very hard on, is to establish that partnership before we sort of move into the TV realm. I did Chael Sonnen's podcast a couple weeks ago, and Chael and I are friends, and Chael said something really interesting, because he was there and sort of helped out and did some stuff for the shows. And he was like, the shows in Vegas were the best production value of any show I've ever seen that wasn't WWE. And, he may be forgetting Nitro, but aside from that, he might be right. Those shows in, in, in Vegas, like, considering it was a pilot and it was a shoestring sort of budget, they looked incredible, you know, and we all came away from that going one way or another. When people see this content, like, they, you know, they're going to be impressed. It's just one of those things where I feel like perhaps they may have been a little too eager to pump their brand out. And I think that wrestling fans now, particularly ones who spend a lot of time on the internet, are, you know, they just have they have very, very high expectations, but also very, very fast expectations. Yeah. They have a very instantaneous need for proof and gratification and this and that. So that may have slowed things down a bit. But I know that the one thing you can say about Jeff is that he knows the business and he also knows how to get things off the ground. I mean, they got TNA off the ground, and people don't often give him enough credit for that. But it went from being, you know, what it was starting in 2002 to 2009 being like 3 points off SmackDown and being the highest rated show on Spike. So, you know, in such a short period of time, that was pretty significant. And then really all I know is that he keeps telling me, you know, to keep November 5th free and this and that. And it's all just, I know what he's doing and he knows that I know. It's just trying to find the right avenue, because if you don't, you can rush something to market. And you'll never make any money, especially in entertainment. You know, you can rush something to get eyeballs on it, and even things like Netflix and stuff. You know, that people think, oh, it's on Netflix, like they must be millionaires. You know, and it really doesn't work like that. You know, almost all shows are sort of the first few seasons are always low paid, and then it's as you start to get, you know, get rolling with it. You know, the money structure of television is, and it's changing so rapidly because of, you know, because of the shift to on demand and everything. So you really have to work hard to get it right, and you really only get one chance.
Sure. Wrestling is one of those businesses where if he I don't know who gave me this kind of quote, but if he shot his wad and eventually fans saw something that wasn't ready, that's going to damage reputation very quickly, and maybe worrying, it could be worryingly irrecoverable, I suppose. So it has to be right.
That's true, but it's also, I don't even, the product is not the issue. Like I say, the stuff that was done in Vegas, it was, you know, Keith Mitchell was in the truck, and anyone who has been around knows that, you know, Keith Mitchell and Kevin Dunn are really the two sort of authorities in that realm. Keith came and did the truck, and we had, you know, we've got Sully doing all the other production. Sully's a genius. So it's like, the stuff, the content is there. It's more about how you inject it into the market in a profitable
platform
way.
No, that's completely makes sense. It's the business as it is, I suppose. These things can sink or swim very quickly.
Yes, and like I say, it's really easy in hindsight to say, well, I would have done this, but I'm sure that if you got Jeff to be honest with you, he would probably say, he probably would have kept quiet a lot longer.
Sure. Well,
I don't know.
Well, we look forward to whatever happens with that. And as you say, November the 5th, I'm sure there'll be some fireworks of that show. That was terrible.
Oh, that was bad.
That was terrible. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, so
you'll chop that out. I deliberately left the pause there. He's
a professional. You can't say he's anything but a professional.
Anyway, so you mentioned Chael there. MMA. I take it you're a big fan as well.
I am. I am a big fan of MMA. I'm actually. Did you see that that Bama have started working with Val? That Val's going to be Val's going to do some interviewing and backstage presenting and stuff for Bama. I thought it was really cool.
As in SoCal Val? Well,
SoCal Val, yeah. Yes. So, not Val Venus. Not
Val Venus. That would be very cool. I mean, a different way.
The big Val Boys is going to go in
there. He'd be back in the... It's just a load of guys in the dressing room with just a towel on.
He starts telling them that, can you sign this position to legalize marijuana?
So I take it.
This thing I could do where I retract my, in case any people are trying to cut it off.
Are you interested at all in doing MMA? Is that something that's ever, you know, tickled your fancy?
You don't fancy taking Connor on now.
No, who cares about that, man? Well, first of all, seeing as you brought it up, he didn't insult me. You know, I'm not a WWE guy, so he didn't say he could slap the head off of me.
If this business has proved anything, that hype doesn't always mean what they want it to be with hype. So God knows what the message really is there.
Conor McGregor's just—he's a bright guy. He's a worker, and I just couldn't understand. I couldn't fathom how so many guys who were supposed to be in the sort of the peak of workers, like, just got so totally worked by it and just didn't see it for what it was, and totally gave him what he wanted, which was a bunch of free publicity.
It was great baiting, though, wasn't it?
And I think maybe it's just because I'm friends with Chael, and Chael really was the precursor to Conor. You know, Chael was the guy who figured it out before anyone else, because Chael's a massive wrestling fan. And when I say massive wrestling fan, like, he consumes everything and the whole history of it, and can talk about it all day and all night. He can talk about wrestling for longer than I can. You know, Chael's just while we're talking about Chael, I don't know if you guys are aware, but I just want to take this platform to extend my condolences to Chael. He's had a really rough week with the death of his baby daughter and stuff. There was a lot of complications, and it's just a horrible, horrible thing. It's just so weird that I was talking to him like a couple of weeks ago, and I just found out about that. It's a really sad, sad thing.
Most people who don't know him, we can definitely echo that 100%.
Yeah, of course. But with the MMA thing, I've had brief moments in my early 20s where I thought, hey, maybe I'll go and train, you know, maybe I'll go and like, and then every time I would start to think about it, I would always see some vicious, brutal knockout, and then I would go, there's no way that's not doing long-term damage.
And this is just on the streets of Kingsley.
That was just Kingsley. Yeah.
That was just Thirsty Thursdays outside Chicago.
That was just a night out with Marty. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. Every time I saw that, I just went, there's just no way that that's not doing, you know, some serious long-term damage to that guy. And I just don't have that instinct in me. I feel like this is the interesting thing about Punk too. You know, going into his thing, I don't know Punk very well, but I've hung around with him a little bit, and we had quite an affinity for one another. But I feel like his personality is quite similar to mine, and I was quite, I'm curious to see how that translates, because I always felt like to be a top fighter, you know, to be a real elite pro fighter, you've almost got to have a little bit of a screw loose. You've got to have a little bit of a desire to be violent, a little bit of a desire to actually want and enjoy hurting someone. And I don't ever have that. And that's why I would never consider doing it, because I know deep down there's a part of me that's just completely against hurting another human, that the idea of thinking, well, it's just business. Like, it's just a fight. Like, I just couldn't. You absolutely cannot have even a shred of that.
It's the instinct to not pounce when they're down, I think.
Right. Well, and just to do the most dangerous and vicious thing. Like, you know, when you see guys doing like elbows on the ground and, you know, and things like that, or like knees to the, repeated knees to like the kidney, or to, you know, hitting one area to do damage, you know.
I suppose as a wrestler, you know what you're not meant to do to make sure these things aren't, especially long term.
Yeah, that's one part of it, but it's just, yeah, I just don't have, I just know that unless, and I'm sure that that's part of why they embraced the pro wrestling sort of model of creating all these huge conflicts between them before they go in there, so that the guys feel less concerned about that. But I've never had, I'd love to work in the genre somehow, you know. But not as a fighter.
Do you think Punk will win his match if he ever has it? I think it's due for November, isn't it? Or...
It's 203. So I have no idea. You know, if someone, I mean, this is, like I say, I like Punk a lot. But I think that if you have to just go by, if you just go by stats and by sort of, really what common sense would tell you, you probably want to lean towards Mickey Gall, because he has, you know, even though he's much younger than Punk, he has more experience. He is younger, he's less injuries, and he has a fight under his belt, and he won it, and he's got good hands. So, but then none of us has really seen, apart from the few bits that they've put into these specials and stuff for UFC, no one's really seen Punk's training. So we don't really know what he's capable of or not. And I hope he has a good, he has to have a good showing. He doesn't have to win, but he does have to have a good showing.
Well, I appreciate we've had you on for quite a while and we're running out of time. And there's a few other things I just wanted to ask you about before we thank you for your time and say goodbye. Hopefully we can get you back on where we can talk about things like Gladiator and the Knights in Norwich and things like that. Yeah, sure. On another time. But
hopefully we can do Wikipedia one day.
We'll get that.
Bit by bit,
yeah. You've got a book out as well, and you're also doing Russo's tour, Wrestling Court and things. Do you want to tell us about those two things?
So, yeah, well, the book has been out for quite some time. It's The Superstar Body. You go to superstarbodybook.com. I'm very proud of it. I've had a lot of really good feedback. Basically, if you're anyone who's just trying to improve your body, you don't have to necessarily want to be a wrestler. You don't have to want to be a bodybuilder or anything like that. It's just I'm giving you the tools in the book to change your body to however you want it to be, whatever your version of a superstar body is, whether that's big, lean, cut, whatever. And it's not just me. I always figured that the guys who really knew what they were talking about were always as a result of a lot of, conversation amongst peers. So I tried to give that experience in the book too. So, guys like Rob Terry, Kurt Angle, David McIntosh, who did Gladiators with me, you know, all these different guys. And for the girls, you know, Mickey and Brooke and other people contributed to it. Plus, like, supplement experts and, top trainers and stuff have all contributed to the book. So you really get a combination of knowledge, which is, you know, and it's written in sort of common sense format. So, like I say, the feedback has been great. So I'm very, very proud of it. Superstarbodybook.com. And yes, so in October, we're going to be bringing Wrestlers Court live to London and Liverpool. Liverpool on Wednesday, October 26th at Shooters Sports Bar. And then Thursday, October 27th, it'll be at Walkabout Temple in London. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It was this crazy idea I had where I went, you know, I saw these live Q&A sort of things happening, and obviously I did the ones with Steiner. I was a special guest on the ones with Scott, and they were really fun, really well done. So I was like, you know what would be fun would be if we did, you know, because we were talking about who would be a good guest for him, and obviously Vince's name came up, and I said if you did Vince, like we should, you know, you could put him in like Wrestler's Court, and then like most good ideas, like any ideas that you think could have a chance to be good in wrestling, it's normally the boys who first bite on it, and I had this conversation with a few of the guys, and they were just like, that's great, we should do that. So that's what we're doing. So I'll be there, Mickey will be there, Carlito will be there, Bull Dempsey will be there, and Vince will be on trial. And I'm sure there'll be a plethora of special guests in the video via satellite testimonies and stuff as well.
And Chris, will you be there? That's your neck of the woods.
That sounds incredible, to be fair. It's Russo on trial. Sounds like a serialized program on American TV.
It's great. That's just, to me, it's just like fun. You know, Vince, for whatever people may think about Vince, you know, he's got a sense of humor about himself, and it's he can't wait. He's like, bring it on. Like, I've got a defense. You know, I've got a defense. Like, I know what, you know, this and that. And so I'll be prosecuting, and Vince will be defending himself.
Chris and I have got altering views on his legacy. One of us loves his stuff, other rolls his eyes.
I don't roll his eyes because I don't love it. I still love it. Some of it's brilliantly bonkers.
But that's the thing. Wrestling is brilliantly bonkers. But
yeah,
I don't love every idea Vince ever had. But at the same time, I think that it's unfair just because he was. I always felt like he was made a bit of a patsy.
I grew up in I suppose I was a bit younger in an era where most of his ideas were gold. So
me too. That's the thing. The highest period of the business, you know, most of it had his fingerprints on, and I just think that I put it this way. I said this in my podcast. I truly believe that if he'd never left WWE, he wouldn't be portrayed the way he is now. I'm not saying he'd be heralded as some sort of genius or whatever, but if he hadn't have left, I don't think he would have been scapegoated as much
I'd go along with that 100%.
I think he was a very valuable resource to them, and I think that they did the necessary. They did what they had to do, which was to try and destroy his credibility, so that he had no value anywhere else, which is, you know, wrestling promoter 101, unfortunately.
And he was probably fit in a good framework there. If people have understood where to get the best and the worst of him, I guess. So
absolutely, yeah. But again, you know, I don't think Vince is the only person who's ever had a bad idea. You know what I mean? And I think that
there's another Vince who's had many bad ideas.
and therein is the point where really he's been the one who's embraced his position in the culture more than anyone else. So it goes with the territory, you know.
Well, on that note, let's just get a quick reminder of all the ways that people can listen to you. So your podcast, just remind us the name again.
Inside Pro Wrestling. You can go to nickaldis.libsyn.com or search Inside Pro Wrestling on iTunes, or you can get me on Twitter at Magnus Official, or if you go to like Mickey's Twitter at Mickey James, anything like that, you'll find links to it.
Brilliant. And the dates again for the Wrestlers Court?
Wrestlers Court Live, Wednesday, October 26th in Liverpool at Shooters, and Thursday, October 27th at Walkabout Temple in London. And if you both the tickets are available through eventbrite.com.
Fantastic. Well, Nick, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Really enjoyed it. Sorry we didn't get too deep into your career there. There was 101 other things that we wanted to ask you.
Why would we care about that? I've talked about it a million times.
Well, there is an element of that, isn't there, when you get people on that you don't want to go over stuff that's been covered in other podcasts over and over and over. So hopefully you've enjoyed it as well. We'd love to get you back on sometime in the future, but thanks for your time today. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we'll see you when you're over in the UK next time.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, guys.
And that was Nick Aldis there, Magnus, and thanks to Nick for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed the triumphant return of the V2 Wrestling Podcast. Please do make sure that you subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcast show that you're listening to us on Broadbean or whatever it may be. So make sure that you do tune in every week, because the shows are going to be coming back more regularly now with more exclusive interviews and things like that. Also check out our forum, which is 606v2.com. Lots of sports chat and wrestling chat on there. Free to join. So make sure that you do join and follow us, like us on Facebook, V2 Wrestling Network and the V2 Journal. So thanks again to our guest Nick today. Thanks to Chris for joining me as well. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll see you again very, very soon.
You've been listening to the V2 Wrestling Podcast. Make sure to get in touch by emailing us at wrestling@v2journal.com. You can follow us on Twitter @V2Wrestling Show and find us on Facebook @V2 Wrestling Network. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a show. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.